Okay, so let's make a start. I've muted everybody. I hope that's okay. If you have any questions, then please put them on the chat. I'm happy to look at that. I'm going to put the sheets again on the chat now. That's going up there in case anyone didn't get them. I hope everybody's well. I hope more of you have had your injections and your vaccinations since last week. You can send me an email to say which bracha you made, if any, as we discussed a couple of weeks ago. Last week, we discussed the Birkat HaMitzvah. We're having three sessions on brachas. This is 2 weeks ago we talked about Birkat HaShevach, brachas of praise, the Shechianu, Hatova HaMeitiv, with specific reference to the vaccine. Last week we looked at the question of Birkat HaMitzvah, the brachas we make, Asher Kiddushanu Mitzvah Yisavu Tivanu, before we do mitzvot. And we looked at the tricky issue at the end of Al or Le, Al Netilat Shadayim, Leishei Basukah, etc. And I hope you've spent a week plowing through that chart that I gave you at the back of the sheet last week, trying to work out what all the brachas are. But that's something which is ongoing and never ending. This week, I would like to talk about Birkat HaNenin in the last part on the Hilchos Brachos series. And I'd like, as I said to you last week, to talk about the tricky issue of chocolate. So I just want to give everybody what they call these days a trigger warning before this shiur. This shiur may make you hungry if you haven't already had breakfast. It may be high in sugar and high in cholesterol, like the stickers that they have now, like anything that tastes of anything decent has more and more of these stickers on. I don't think it's high in salt, so that we're okay. But if you haven't had breakfast, I suggest that you pop out now and get yourself something, because you'll certainly want it in the middle of the shit. I'll also be looking for Yiddish speakers to help with some of these strange Yiddish words that we're coming out with. But we'll get more of that soon. First of all, before I start, I'd like to just mention our kind sponsor, that the Shiurim is sponsored for the whole of 2021, anonymously, in the merits of an aliyah for the neshamas of Matisyahu ben Yisrael, Aaron ben Menachem Lev, and Eliana Bas Yaakov. Very, very grateful for that sponsorship. And the Shiur is Le'aliyat Nishmatam. Okay, so I'm going to share the screen. Today's Shiur, as I said, is very focused on chocolate. Chocolate is something that, one second, let's get the screen sharing right. One second. It should appear in a minute. Okay, now. You should be able to see the screen now, correct? Yep, good. Okay, fine. Okay, so the chocolate is something which is consumed in enormous amounts. We consume worldwide 7.2 million tons of chocolate a year. That's quite a lot of chocolate. Mars alone, as a chocolate maker, has net sales every year of $17 billion. And the estimate of the annual chocolate production for the whole world is $83 billion of the global economy is on the production and consumption of chocolate. So it's obviously a very big deal, something that, of course, they didn't even know about until about 500 years ago. But it's also a fascinating halachic topic, and I want to look with you at some of the halachas of chocolate, not specifically, not only with the chocolate raisin, but other principles as well. And we'll see that this is actually a good opportunity to review some principles in Hilchos Brachos, which otherwise maybe we get a bit rusty on, and we'll see them all again right now. So let's look for a second at the history of chocolate. Chocolate, of course, is not native to Europe or the Middle East. It's native to southern Mexico and Central America. And it has a very ancient history. I brought you on the sheet here. The Olmecs and later the Mayans and later the Aztecs cultivated chocolate. They actually called it cacao, and the Europeans turned it to cocoa. They just switched the vowels around. And the word chocolate actually is a very ancient, classical Central American word that means warm liquid. And in fact, they used to drink, the royalty, and not just the royalty, but others, used to drink liquid chocolate from golden goblets. And I brought you some, in the footnotes there, some quotes from the conquistadores when they saw Montezuma drinking chocolate from these gold cups. Chocolate was something which was obviously very prized, and indeed they used it as currency. They used the cocoa beans as currency. So the Spanish brought cocoa to Europe and planted it all around Europe, and later industrialists took it to Africa, Indonesia, and all around the world in tropical areas. You can't grow cocoa trees in England or in America, but in tropical areas you can. Now, things began to develop. The Spanish decided that they didn't like chocolate with just raw, in its liquid raw form. They liked it with some sugar. So that started a whole industry of sugar production. And we're going to have to look at how you make chocolate and how you make sugar to understand what the brachas are of chocolate and sugar and why they are like they are. So sugar ended up going in, and by the 1580s, 90s, chocolate was a drink which the Spanish enjoyed a lot and began to spread around Europe. In 1729, fries, anyone who is, I don't know if they ever had this in England, but fries was a chocolate manufacturer. If they had anything, I don't know if they had it in America, but fries was the first person to have a patent on creating solid chocolate. That was, that hadn't been done before. In 1847, the first solid chocolate was produced by Fry's in Bristol. Until then, it had only been a drink. And later, they began to refine the production system. In Switzerland, in 1876, they decided to add milk to the chocolate. We'll talk about what kind of milk that is and how that affects the chocolate. In 1879, another Swiss chocolatier invented the Conch machine, which mixes and aerates the chocolate so it can mix with other things and blend well with other ingredients. And by the time you hit the late 1800s, already the family companies like Cadbury, Mars, Nestle, Hershey were making chocolate for people all around the world. A little quirk, fun fact, when I used to be a lawyer back in the old days, one of my clients was actually Cadbury's. So I had to go up to their chocolate plant and walk around their chocolate plants and discuss legal matters while everything smelt of baking chocolate, which was not the easiest of clients to have, but that was a long time ago. Now, one of the interesting things, just before we go into the brachas issue, there are a few other issues that come up as well. In addition to milk and sugar, there were some chocolate makers that actually put animal fats into the chocolate for various different reasons. That, of course, makes them trace. So one of the shilas that comes up with chocolate is if you want to run a batch of kosher chocolate on a system, on a plant that's had trace chocolate produced, you need to kasher the plant. And one of the shilas is how you're going to do that. So the obvious way that you kasher anything is with boiling water. So you can just run boiling water through the plant and then everything will be fine. The problem is that the chocolate makers will not allow that because water, when it gets into the chocolate making process, is extremely damaging. So they will say, no way, you cannot have water in our machine, think of something else. So the most obvious shaila is, can I kasher something with a non-water liquid? We don't think of this much. We kasher with water, boiling water, in the water, pouring the water. But can you kasher with something else? And can you kasher with chocolate? Can you use chocolate liquid to kasher the machine? Meaning do a run of chocolate at high temperature through the machine in order to kasher it, and therefore now the next run of chocolate will be kosher. And in fact, there are many poskim that were very suspect about this for various different reasons. The chocolate's too viscous. Rav Moshe says you can't use a thick liquid to kasher. You have to use a thin liquid, and chocolate is solid at room temperature. But there are poskim, there are authorities that rely on this to kasher a chocolate factory from milchik to parav. That they will rely on it, so that if you had a milchik run and then you want to have a parav run, so some people will kasher the machinery with chocolate itself, but in other circumstances they use oils, soybean, canola, sunflower oil, which the chocolate makers are okay with as long as it's not water and they're much more runny and therefore you can use them to kasher. So that just raises the fascinating question of what can you kasher with and what are the limits on how thick the liquid has to be. But one way or the other, we managed to come away with kosher chocolate, which is obviously very delicious. Now, how is it made? So have a look at this little picture here. This is a cocoa tree. It has fruits, colored yellow fruit the size of melons, little pineapple-sized fruits. And each of those fruits, when you open it up, has around between 20 and 50 seeds, which are called cocoa beans. What do they do with the cocoa beans? They, first of all, they ferment them, and then they dry them in the sun, and then they ship them off to the chocolate makers. What do? They basically they roast them. They roast the cocoa beans, and then they winnow them to take the shell off the beans. And with the stuff in the middle, with the pulp in the middle, they basically grind that. That's called nib, and they grind it to make a thick, viscous liquid called chocolate liquor. Now, it's not alcoholic. Don't get excited. Chocolate liquor just means that it's a liquid chocolate form. And this was basically what the Aztecs used to drink. That was the unsweetened version that the Aztecs used to drink. Now, what they do then is they separate it. they separate it, they turn it into cocoa butter and cocoa bean solids. There's a special machine, a hydraulic press that they use for that, and they separate it out. And the solids are ground into cocoa powder, and the cocoa butter remains a liquid consistency. In order to make chocolate, they basically mix these things together. They mix chocolate liquor, cocoa butter, chocolate powder, cocoa powder, and they put in milk and sugar and lecithin and lactose and all sorts of other things. And then they put it through a conch machine. You see, it's very processed, and this is going to be very important halakhically. They put it through a conch machine where it's heated at very high temperatures. This gives it a very smooth taste and consistency. They cool it down and then they temper it, heat it slowly, cool it slowly to let it harden properly without separating out. And finally, they flavor it and they cut it and they package it and Bob's your uncle. You've got a bar of chocolate. But a lot went into your chocolate in order to put it on your table. You can see that. Many, many processes of heating and cooling and grinding and conching, etc., etc. White chocolate is made in the same way. It just doesn't contain any cocoa solids. It only contains cocoa butter, usually mixed with some sugar and usually some milk as well. And that will be important halakhically too as we get into the sources. Now, just two more points before we get into the brokkos issue. Two of the things I mentioned there in the process of chocolate making were heating and also milk going in, which raises two fascinating shilas, which I'll just stop sharing the screen for a second. Two fascinating shilas. One shila is whether there's a problem of bishul akum. As you probably know, that one is not allowed to eat anything which has been cooked by a non-Jew, with two conditions. It has to be something which will be served at a very fancy affair, ole l'shulchan ha-melachim. It can't be something very basic, and it has to be something which is not edible raw. So chocolate seems to fulfill both of those criteria. Chocolate is fancy, it serves at fancy affairs, and also you can't eat it raw, you can only eat it in the cooked form. So why is any chocolate kosher? Forget about the ingredients, why isn't all chocolate prohibited because of bishul akum? So Rav Herschel Schechter basically says, he has two heterim. First of all, he says that chocolate is not normally used with bread. And one of the opinions in bishul akum is that it's only something which is normally served with bread. And he says, and separately, chocolate is made in commercial factories, and there's another opinion that bishul akum doesn't apply to things made in commercial factories. Neither of these two heterim are usually strong enough to permit a food, but when you put them together, says Rav Herschel Schechter, that allows us to eat chocolate which is made purely by non-Jews. There are other issues as well, which is often the chocolate is a fairly minor part of a meal, it's not a significant part of a meal. Also, some poskim say that the heating process, the bishul, the heating process, is not a regular process. It's generated by the friction of the chocolate machines, the conch in the chocolate machines, and therefore there are all sorts of reasons why chocolate is not a problem of bishul akum, and you can eat chocolate which was cooked, made, whatever, by a non-Jewish company without concerns of bishul akum. That's one point. A second point is the milk. Now, this is, as you probably know, in Israel, if you buy a chocolate bar, it will often say on it, made with avkat chalav nochri, which is milk powder produced by non-Jews. And this raises the whole question of chalav akum and chalav Yisrael. Is it a problem to eat chocolate with milk in it, milky chocolate, where the milk has been produced by non-Jewish sources? Now, obviously, for those people who rely on the heter of Rav Moshe Feinstein, which says that one is allowed to eat milk from non-Jewish sources anyway, that's a famous heter. We actually looked at that in the Shirim a while ago, because he says that when Chazal required the milk to be supervised or milked by a Jew, they didn't say that in a situation where there's no danger of contamination. Only where there's a danger. Since there's no danger of contamination in the milk production in America or in England, so our milk, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, is equivalent to Chalav Yisrael. He says it's better to have real supervised milk where you can, but the milk that we produce today in America and England and Europe is on a status of Chalav Yisrael. Okay, so if that's what you hold, then no problem. You can eat the milk with chocolate. What if you don't hold by Rav Moshe's heter? Many people don't. They say, no, it's a chiddush. Not everybody agrees with this. So then Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, a very important posek in Israel, came out in the 1940s, 50s, I think it was 30s, 40s, with a psak, that the prohibition on chalav nochri, of milk from non-Jewish sources never could apply to powdered milk, because it's not milk in the normal way, and also you can't powder treif milk. Back in his day that was true. Today you can actually powder treif milk, camel's milk, horse's milk, whatever. And therefore he said, even people who wouldn't drink regular chalav nochri should be able to eat powdered milk from that source. And many Israelis do hold by that. It's more popular as a psak in Israel than in England. There are people in Israel that will only drink powdered milk and will not drink regular milk from a chalav nochri source. And that is a big issue when you look at the chocolate bar. Next time you look at the chocolate bar, you'll see on the heksher, le'ochlei avkat chalav nochri bilvad, only for people who eat powdered milk. Okay, that's an interesting topic. The reason, by the way, that they put powdered milk in most chocolate is because, again, they don't want liquid milk in your chocolate, because the water contents in the milk, they're worried will interfere with the chocolate making process. So that's a couple of points. One is Bishul Akum and one is Chalav Yisrael, which come up a lot on chocolate, two halachic issues. But let's get into brochas, because my interest today is, what is the brocha on chocolate? So everybody on this Zoom, I bet there's nobody on this Zoom who has never eaten chocolate. And I bet you the brocha you made on the chocolate was 99% of you probably made, Shehakol Nihyeh B'Bara, which is the sort of general brocha that you make on things that don't grow on trees, things that don't grow in the ground, etc. You make on cheese, you make on meat, etc. However, it's not so posh. Have a look with me now. Let's look at some sources. Enough talking about chocolate manufacture. Let's look at some sources together. The starting point is the Mishnah. The Mishnah says as follows, Ketzad mevarachim al haperos. What brocha do you make on fruits? So al peros ha'ilan oimer borei peri ha'etz. This is all well known. On a fruit that grows on a tree, you say borei peri ha'etz. Makes the fruit of the tree. Chutz min ha'yayin, apart from wine. Wine is an exception. She'al ha'yayin oimer borei peri ha'gafen. Okay, yayin is upgraded to a higher level status from borei peri ha'etz, which is great, to borei peri ha'gafen. But al peros ha'aretz, fruit that grows in the ground, omer borei peri adama. Chutz min ha'pad, apart from bread, obviously made from wheat normally, or barley, she'al ha'pad, omer hu omer ha'motzei lechem min ha'aretz. Everybody knows this. Ve'al ha'yirakot, omer borei peri adama. And on salad, on vegetables, the green vegetables like that, you say borei peri adama. Rabbi Yehuda omer, there's a minority opinion we don't follow, which says, no, they get their own special brocha, borei minei desha'im. So if you're eating salad, according to Rabbi Yehuda, many of the ingredients will be borei minei desha'im. We obviously do not have that brocha. We don't follow that view. All things that grow from the ground are borei peri ha'adama. The second Mishnah says, baruch ala peiros ha'ilan borei peri ha'adama. If by mistake you made a borei peri ha'adama on the fruit that grows from a tree, you might do that. You might pick up an apple by mistake, make borei peri ha'adama, and go, you know, what did I say? I said the wrong brocha. Yatsa, it's okay. Because trees also grow from the ground. Va'al peros ha'aretz, but if you ate a vegetable and you said borei peri ha'etz, you picked up a potato and said borei peri ha'etz, lo yatsa, that's not good, because potatoes don't grow on trees. Okay? Sounds like an expression, but potatoes don't grow on trees. Va'al kulam, and on anything, im ama shehakol niyeh, if you said shehakol niyeh vivara, on anything, then b'diyeved, it works. Shehakol works for everything. Now, of course, that doesn't mean you can just go around saying, well, why do I need to learn Hilchos Brachos then? Just make shahakol on everything, and it'll all work. Every vegetable, every fruit, on the bread, I'll just make shahakol. Easy. One brocha. The Shulchan Aruch says, no, not so quick. It doesn't work that way. Shahakol only works, number one, after you've learned Hilchos Brachos as well as you can, but you can't work out what this thing is, and B, when you've tried to work out what this thing is, and you just don't know what it is. We'll see soon. Orange peels. Candied orange peels. There's a big machloikas. Are they borei peri ha'etz? Are they borei peri adama? Are they shehakol? In that situation where you've done the learning and you've tried your hardest to work out what you're eating, but you can't work it out, okay, then shehakol will work. But it's not something you can just run to in order to avoid learning Hilchos Brachos. Okay, fine. Okay, so what's chocolate made from? Does chocolate grow in the ground or does chocolate grow on trees? Chocolate grows on trees. So the brocha, ostensibly, for chocolate, should be borei peri ha'etz. Why don't we make borei peri ha'etz on chocolate? So you're going to turn around and say, okay, but look, it doesn't look like the stuff that grows on the trees. Look how it's been processed. So that raises the question, which we need to address now, at what stage of processing your fruit or veg do you turn it into a shehakol? And there's any number of things we do We crush potatoes, make mashed potatoes, we mash up avocados, we make fruit into jams and jellies, and we take all of these things and we change them and crush them and boil them and smush them, eventually to the point where we have, well, what brocha do I make on this now? It doesn't quite look like the original thing, maybe it looks like something similar. So the Gemara addresses that directly. Have a look at this Gemara, important Gemara number 2. Amar Bar Avashi. So Amar Bar Avashi says the following. Hai dufsha de tamri, date honey. Date honey. What bracha do you make on it? Mevarchin aloe shehakol nihyeh bidvaro. Now, how do you make date honey? I have to do a bit of culinary research to prepare this share because I'm not a big date honey maker. But date honey, basically you take dates, you boil them up slowly in a pan till they kind of mush up into a sort of a warm and mushed up sort of a combination. And then you put them in a cheesecloth and you squeeze out the liquid from the cooked dates, and the liquid turns into date honey. You let it boil up the liquid, and it turns into a kind of thick, sort of more viscous liquid, and that is date honey. Silan, we call this silan, right? So what bracha do you make on this date honey? Shehakol. My time, and why not Berei Pri Ha'etz? Dates, one of the shivas haminim. Berei Pri Ha'etz. Says the Gemara, Zeh ba'almahu, it's just moisture, it's just liquid. Once something is liquid, like apple juice, orange juice, these are all shehakol, so date juice is also shehakol. Okay, good. Amalei ha'humer rabbanan l'rava. One of the rabbis asked Rava, trima mahu. What about trima? What is trima? Trima, Rashi explains, trima is kol davar hakatush, something that has been crushed, sat somewhat, but not, the enumuru sat, but not completely mashed. Something which has been pressed, but has not been completely mashed up, not pulped. What bracha do you make on that? So Amalei, so Rava answered him, Chalish tevadai kamash, you mean something that's been pressed, sort of crushed together. The adikata milsa dahada amar Ravasi, and you remind me of what Rav Asi said. I'll tell you the halacha of something which has been pressed, but not completely crushed. Hai tamri shel truma. These dates of truma, if you have dates made of truma, now truma, you have to eat in its normal form. You can't pulp it. You can't juice it. Truma has to be eaten as the fruit. It has to be eaten as a kohen. He has to eat it in a proper form. So what can you do with that fruit? Obviously, if you're a kohen, you've got a lot of truma fruit. What can you do with it? I want to make jam from my truma fruit. Can you do that? Mutala asad mehen truma. You're allowed to make truma. Oh, so whatever this truma is, it's okay for truma. But asal asad mehen sheikha. But you can't make beer out of it, liquor out of it. You can't change it to that degree. The hilchasa, and therefore the halacha is, tamri va'avitu trim, if you have dates and you make this crushed date paste, mevarachin alai b'rei pri ha'eitz. It's still b'rei pri ha'eitz. My timer, what's the reason? So they'll say, timer kamikatamikara, and it still looks like the original form. It still looks like what it started. It's still recognizable as dates. And that's going to be very important for us. If you mash up potatoes, you still make b'rei pri ha'adama on the potatoes because they still look like potatoes. They just look like potatoes that have been mashed. But if you turn them, we'll see, into a potato puree, which is almost runny and so fine that nobody could really know, unless you'd seen it before, you wouldn't know what this came from, then you'll say shehakol. It depends on how crushed or processed it is. Have a look at the Rambam, number 3. Yirakot shedarcham lechalek. Vegetables that you normally boil up, make into soup. Shaltan, if you did that, Mavarech, al mei shelek, even on the water from the soup, the juice from the soup, shalahen borei pri ha'adama. That's still borei pri ha'adama. Because it's still got the vegetables in it. So husha shakam lishtot meimein, if you boiled it in order to drink that juice, it's vegetable juice. Shemeimei hashlakas, kishlakas, because the water of the vegetables is like those cooked vegetables, the mokum shidakam lishtoisam, when that's normal for them to do. Dvash tamarim, but date honey, like we said before, mavarachim alav shechel she'akol, because it's completely changed. Aval tamarim shemacham b'yad, but if you crush dates by hand, v'hoitzi garinim, you took out the pits, shalahem, v'asam kemo isa, you make almost like a date butter, a date paste, that doesn't even look like dates anymore. He says, mavarach aleim shechel b'rei pri ha'etz. He's the Sfardim, we'll see, a very reluctant to drop that bracha, you still make b'rei pri ha'etz. Well, the soif brocha achas main sholosh, and at the end you make al haperis for al haperis, etc. So the Rambam clearly says that you have to do a lot to a fruit to downgrade it from its bracha. Even if you take date paste and make it into like date dough, even if you take vegetables and you boil them up into soup, it's still breaker adama for the vegetables, it's still breaker eights for the dates. You really have to completely change it like date honey in order to make a shahakot. So when the Beis Yosef brings this down in the on the Torah, he says as follows. Perush Rashi, Rashi explains, Trima Dava HaKoshesh Ksasa Ein Marutzak, that this Trima is something which is crushed but not completely mashed. Umashma Mitvarav, and it sounds from him, She'im Hi Marutzak Lagamri, if you really completely mashed it, Ein Mavarchin Alea Brei Pri Ha'etz, then it wouldn't lose its Brei Pri Ha'etz. V'chein Lina B'divrei Rabbeinu, and he says that seems to be the Torah as well, V'chein Kosev B'Trumas Hadesh, and he brings other people. Aval, HaRambam, we saw, the Rambam says, Tamarim Shemiyachem B'yadah Hoitzi Garinim, if you took these dates and made them into paste, Va'asam Tmo Isra Mavarech Alem Tachila B'rei Pri Ha'etz. And he says, therefore we have a machlokas. We have a debate. If you really crush something into a paste, there are some people that will still make B'rei Pri Ha'etz. The Rambam, the Sfaradim are very keen on keeping B'rei Pri Ha'etz. And there are others that will say, nah, that's enough already. That's Shehakol Niyid B'varo. Fine. What do we paskin? We do this all the time. When you take some, let's imagine some plum jam. You want to have a spoonful of plum jam. Okay, normally you'll say, I normally put it on a piece of bread. But let's say you don't put it on a piece of bread. You just want to spoon out the jam. You just like eating the jam from the jam jar. You can admit later if that's what you do. Okay? So what bracha would you make on that? Would you make B'rei Pri Ha'etz? Would you make Shehakol? So, looking number five. Let's look at the Shulchan Aruch. We seem to have a machlokas here. Says the Shulchan Aruch as follows. Tamarim shemiyacham b'yad. Let's say you take dates and you crush them by hand. We've seen this already a few times. Va'asa mehem itza v'hoisi mehem garinim. Okay. Garinehem. Afilu hachi, nevertheless. Loi nishtaneis b'rikasam. The bracha doesn't change. U'mavarech aleihem borei peri ha'et. Okay, good. So the date, he does like the Rambam. U'le besoif bracha me'ein shalosh. Says the Ramah, Ulafi Zeh, Huadin Hanikra Pawilda. This Pawilda. Now what's Pawilda? Pawidla. Pawidla actually is a Polish dish, and no doubt a Yiddish dish. Pawidla is a plum jam. Pawidla is a plum jam. What bracha would you make on this plum jam? According to this, Mavarakim Alein, Breakriyais. You'd make grapery ice because it's still plums. It's, even though it's crushed, even though it's boiled, it still looks like plums to some degree. And then he says, Ve'yesh amru levarach aleim shehakol. But there are others that say, no, you have to make shehakol. V'sav nechush lechatzchila levarach shehakol. And actually, I think he says the bracha should be shehakol. Aval im birech for grapery ice, yatsa. But if you made a grapery ice, then you're yotze. Kichein nira ike, because I actually think that opinion is probably the main opinion. But you can make the shahakol is the minhag to make on this jam. So what you've got here is, and we'll see why this is important in a few minutes, you've got here a varying degree of psak as to how crushed something needs to be to downgrade from its original brocha to borei peri ha'etz. And the Mishnah Brura says that to Ashkenazim, at least the Sfaradim may be more keen to make the original brocha, but at least to Ashkenazim, we're pretty keen to go down to shahakol and make shahakol on these things. So have a look here with what he says in the Mishnah Brura. He says, the halacha kaima hilchas the kaima lan kedasa machaba. Okay, the heichad the mamashan kaim, when you can still see the original thing, loy nishtaneis birkasan. You don't change the bracha. That's why mashed potatoes, mashed avocados still have the original bracha, breakri aiz, breakri adama, whatever it was originally. Barak with pawidla, but with this plum jam, she'avat kol tzarasa, it's completely changed. It's completely a new format. The loy nika klal mashehu az. It doesn't look anything like what it was then. The chatchilim of arish shehakol. So we can make barach shehakol on jam. Kachrasa Ramah, like the Ramah says, the barach hazo yotze alkol alakol b'diyevet. Okay, fine. There's a question, there's a couple of questions on the chat here. One second. Let me just go back to these. Okay, so the original Hershey was an anti-Semite. Okay, good. So don't make a bracha on him then. Okay, so applesauce. So applesauce will depend on how thick the applesauce is. Thick applesauce will still, with chunks of apple, will still be breakery at 8. Thin applesauce will be shehakol. Okay, cake with fruit we're not going to talk about now, and cheesecake, that's a whole debate, because we'll get to that when we get to the chocolate raisins. Charosis made with dates. Ah, charosis. Everybody loves to eat charosis. So charoset is made with dates. So again, if it has big chunks of dates in it, you can still see dates. So it'll be pre ha'et. But if it doesn't, if it's just a all mashed up completely, it'll be shehakol. Potato chips. Oh, good. So potato chips are very, very interesting, because if potato chips are made from real potatoes, just cut potatoes and fried, the bracha is b'rei pri hadama, because they still look like potato slices. But if potato chips are made from powder, like Pringles, and reconstituted, then they are sufficiently processed that they are now shehakol niyeh b'dvara. Potato kugel is got bits of potatoes, b'rei pri hadama, that's for sure. It looks like potato in it. And preserves with large fruit pieces will also be bravery at 8. I can see there's a lot of questions here coming up. And I can see you already getting hungry. I can see it on your faces. But the point here is, what I'm trying to get to is chocolate. So let's focus on the chocolate. Two important things before we get to the application to chocolate. So it says the Mishnah Brewer, number 7. Shehakol. Va'arkei mini, and then he gives other kinds of Yiddish words, which I don't know what they all mean. Agram, v'yadgras, v'yadgas. Umalinas, these are all small fruits that you make into jam, and it's all mushtar, pukiyotu behem, shesokatinata, you squeeze them, umarachakim otam, and you process them, b'dvash, into like honey, b'tzuka with honey and sugar, mabarakim alem shehakol. It's all shehakol. Kevan shehem murusakim, they're all completely shredded, v'nimuchim, and they're all completely melted, lagamri, v'avad mehem surasim, they don't look anything like they originally did, b'dieved im birech aleim, birkato, if you made the ha'et or the dama, Harui, which is suitable, then yatsa. Now, we'll see in a minute, just hold your horses, how this is going to apply to chocolate. So what have we seen so far? If something is so denatured that it doesn't look anything like the original thing, then it's shehakol. For everybody. So now, what bracha do we think we should make on chocolate? Shehakol. Right? Because chocolate is so distant from the cocoa bean, so many things have been done to it, that it doesn't seem anything related to the original product. And so based on what we've seen so far, this should clearly be in the shehakol bracket. There's only one problem, and that is source number 8. It says the Mishnah Brewer as follows. Ve'im roiv derech achilas oisan haperas hu al yidei risit. But if the main way that people eat this fruit is through the processed form, then af l'chatchila mavarech v'kaso harui, then it keeps its original bracha no matter what you do to it. Beile inyan brei pri ha'eitz, or brei pri adama, whether it's ha'eitz or hadama, kagoin, ma'achal shem adama, vashlin midluin. There's some kind of thing that they make from goods there. Shikorin kribus. Again, some of you might know these Yiddish words. Kribus, something like that. V'chein ingva. Now, ingva I do know, because ingva is ginger. Okay? And when I remember when I was a small child, one of my great aunts used to always bring imbas. Ingvers is made from ginger. It's a ginger, sugared ginger preserve. Because that's the way that you eat it, the shari v'samim, shesokatim, she'oichlim, imtukim, avarachim, b'rei pri adama. Oh, so that's going to cause us some problems. Why so? Because the Mishnah Brewer said, if you eat a fruit only in a certain way, this is the only way we eat this fruit, then it should have its original brocha. So now we have a problem with chocolate. Because on the one hand, it's so processed, it's nothing like the original tree. It's nothing like the original fruit. It should be downgraded already to shehakol. On the other hand, there is no other way that we eat the fruit of the chocolate tree, of the cocoa tree. The only way we eat it is bars of chocolate. So if this is the normal way you eat it, just like when you take a piece of candied ginger, a piece of candied ginger is b'rei pri ha'adama. It's not shehakol, because this is the way you eat ginger. Nobody chews on ginger roots. That's not what happens. You eat it in a candied form. So too, chocolate should, in theory, be b'rei pri ha'adama. So that's the way we eat the fruit. So what are we going to do? What are we going to do? So are there any sources directly dealing with chocolate? And the answer is there are. The first mention of chocolate in the classic Meforshim is in number 9, in the Shari Tshuva. The Shari Tshuva was beginning of the 1800s. And he says as follows. He says, number 9, Ein Be'er Hetiv. Read the Be'er Hetiv. Siyim b'zeh shegam hu noig levarish shahakol al kafe v'te. He made a shahakol on coffee and tea. Kamina go'olam like everybody else does. Vagam al chocolati. He brings his thin chocolati. Chasa v'divrei Yosef. He brings a salt v'divrei Yosef, which is levarech shehakol, to break the shehakol. V'chein amadava. And that is what everybody does. Makes a shehakol on chocolate. So you'll say, well, okay, that solves the problem. The answer is no. Because he's not talking about solid chocolate. He's talking about liquid chocolate. He's talking about a cocoa. to drink as a drink, which is how they all ate chocolate in those days. And of course, everybody agrees that you make a shahakal on liquid chocolate. That's not even an issue. So what's it going to be with, what is the bracha going to be on solid chocolate? So here you move on to Rav Shlomo Zalman. There is a fascinating tshuva of Rav Shlomo Zalman, a machlokas between Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says as follows. Be'inyan, let's look at this briefly. I'm not going to look at all of this, but let's look at part of this. Be'inyan chocolate. Shenog levarech alayah shahakol. He, I agree, everybody makes shahakol on chocolate. Nasati v'nasati. I have been back and forth. I have debated. Bazeh im gedole hador. I have spent time going from one gadol hador to the other to ask them about chocolate. Debishlam ala mashke. Okay, on chocolate milk, on chocolate, melted chocolate, on chocolate drink. Shel cacao on cocoa. Nicha, okay, I agree. Mashim avarachim shahakol. That makes a perfect sense. Fine. But chocolate is a food. We don't drink it just as a drink now. And he quotes the Shulchan Aruch, she'ala besamim, shechukim, umoravim, and sukkah, on all of these roots and spices that are mixed with sugar, habesamim ikka, the spice is the main thing, umovarech aleim, kedin birka soysam besamim, and you make the actual bracha that you would have made on the original. And then he quotes the Magen Avraham, she'kasa dekivin she'had derech, since the normal way to eat this fruit is in a mushed and processed form, that's called they kept their original form. And therefore he says, Hari gam cacao derech achilas and rak ali de kitshfurisuk yesh levarech al ze berepriay. He says, I cannot see any other way of dealing with chocolate other than making a berepriay. Because that is the fruit of the tree, that is the way you eat the fruit of the tree. In the end, he says, maybe since it's mixed with other things, and maybe sometimes it's a minority ingredient, it's less choshev, and I'm not 100% sure. And he says, okay, people make shahakol, and that's the minag. And he ends off here, or lechein, at the end of the tshuva, he says, v'tzorich iyan gadol. This requires a great deal of investigation as to what bracha to make on chocolate. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is not keen to paskin breakri ha'eitz, but he thinks it should be breakri ha'eitz. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva we'll see in a minute on chocolate raisins, where he says, absolutely paskin, he says, absolutely clear, shehakol nivra. He doesn't even debate it. He says, it's absolutely clear that the chocolate on the chocolate raisin is shehakol. Okay? What is the basis of the machlokis between them? Why do they differ in this way? What is the issue? So, the issue really is the difference between sugar and spice. Okay? Sugar and spice, and all things nice, what is the bracha you make on them? So, what's the bracha you make on sugar? The bracha on sugar is shahakol, and the bracha on ginger is brei pri adama. Why? They're both processed, it's both the way you normally eat them. So, the Shulchan Aruch Paskin is interestingly two things. We'll first look at the spices, then we'll look at the sugar, and then we'll see really what's going on here. The Shulchan Aruch says as follows. Besamin shechukim, if you take spices and you crush them down, or muravim hibsukim, you mix them with sugar, etc. Habesamin ikka, the spice remains the main thing. Umavarech aleim kedim birkas oisam besamin, you make the original bracha that they had. The Mishnah Brura explains here again, afka shehem shechukim v'nimuchim, even though they've been melted down and processed, lagamri completely, at she'ein nika behem ta'aram, harishon, till they don't look like the original thing at all. Nevertheless, non-ishtanis berkasan alidezeh, the bracha didn't change, the kula alma, everybody agrees, the derech habasamim lichtosh ba'oifanzeh, because that's the normal way you eat them. But on sugar, says the Shulchan Aruch, number 13, ala sukkar mavarech shahakol. Sugar is shahakol. The chemot says kanim utukim shahakol. Why? Why is sugar shahakol, and yet a spice like the ginger is berei pri ha'adama? So the Mishnah Brura basically has a whole piece, I'm not going to read this inside, that sugar beets are also very highly processed. Before you get sugar, which is in your kitchen, this has gone through many, many different soakings and cookings and distillings and refinings and crushings and all sorts of things. And yet the sugar, everybody agrees, is shehakol. And it seems that what's going on is that Rav Moshe Feinstein says that chocolate is more akin to sugar, and sugar looks nothing like anything like the original sugar plant, not even remotely, and it's distilled and it's extracted. And yet Rav Shlomo Zalman holds basically that chocolate is more akin to the ginger. And that's really what the machlokas is. One compares chocolate to sugar, and therefore says shahakol, and the other compares chocolate to spice, like a ginger or something like that, and says it retains its original brocha. In practical terms, everybody agrees that if you say shahakol on chocolate, that's good. And pretty much everybody agrees that if you made ha'eitz on chocolate, that would work as well. But the minhag clearly is to make shahakol on chocolate, and that's fine. By the way, Rav Kaganov in one of his articles says that when you're eating white chocolate, everybody should agree that that is shahakol, because that's not made with any of the cocoa powder. It's only made with the actual the cocoa butter and the liquids that are part of it. Fine. So I think that we can keep on making bravery ha'eitz on chocolate, shahakol on chocolate. And if you have a specific minhag, if you're one of the students of Rav Shlomo Zalman and you had a direct masorah from him that you should make bravery ha'eitz on chocolate, then okay, we can that has a basis as well. But clearly the minhag is to make bravery to make shahakol niyeh bivarah on chocolate, and that seems to be what most people do. Fine. What about the famous chocolate raisin? Let's get to the main event, which is the chocolate raisin. So now that I've got a chocolate raisin, what do I have? I have a raisin in the middle, which is clearly bravery ha'eitz. Everyone agrees on that. And I have a chocolate coating around the outside, which is a debate. Shahakol, probably. Bravery ha'eitz, possibly. Okay? So how do I decide which bracha to make on this chocolate raisin? Now, I said to you before, I'm particularly partial to chocolate raisins and chocolate-coated orange peels. So for me, this is a very lemaisa question. So if you look here, let's look at some sources. There's a couple of questions on the chat. People are very talkative today. We did potato kugel. What about mixed fruit salad, apples and berries and strawberries? Okay, with mixed fruit salad, you have to first decide whether to make one or two brachas, and then what is the majority? Usually, if it's all together in one spoon, it comes up in one spoon, you'll go with the majority, whether it's bereper ha'etz or bereper ha'dama. Imbalacha made from carrots flavored by ginger. Interesting, so it has a lot of carrots in it, but it's not pure ginger. Interesting, that. Hot cocoa syrup, shahakol, definitely. 85% chocolate. Wow, that's called a migraine waiting to happen. So that you will be more likely to make ha'etz, but the minhag is shahakol. Okay, chocolate coated nuts, that's what I'm getting. Oh, I'll get to peanuts in a minute. Cornflakes. Okay, let's not get into cornflakes now. Actually, I will mention cornflakes. Kellogg's cornflakes are a bravery ha'adama because they're made from roasted kernels of corn. But if you're into the Israeli Telma cornflake variety, they are like Pringles. They're reconstituted from powder. They actually taste that way as well. That would be shahakol niyeh bivarah. Okay? But let's get into this right now. Let's get into the issue of Ikar and Tofel. Having discussed chocolate and whether it's ha'etz or shahakol, says the Mishnah number 15. Look with me, number 15. Zeh haklal. This is the basic rule when you have two things together. Kol shehu Ikar, if you have a main thing, ve'imoy tveila, and you have a subsidiary thing with it. This is very common. You have a sausage and you dip it into masa ketchup. Or anything that has a cracker and you put a little bit of jam on it to eat the cracker. When you have a main thing and you have a subsidiary thing, says the Mishnah, Mavarech al ha'ikah, you always make one bracha on the main thing, or poita et ha'tfeila, and that covers the subsidiary thing. You would never make two brachas on cornflakes and milk. You have to first work out what is the main thing. Am I here to eat cornflakes? In which case it's bravery adama, if they're Kellogg's. Or am I here to drink milk and I like cornflakes in my milk, but I'm here to drink milk. And you make a bracha on the main thing. And the Shulchan Aruch passes this way, in number 16, Kol shehu ikar ve'imoy tfeila, when you have a main thing and a subsidiary thing, peirush, what does that mean? Dava bilti nechshav, something less chashuv. Clearly the sausage and the tomato ketchup, the sausage is the main thing. Okay, I know kids only eat food in order to eat the ketchup. That's what they really want to eat, is the ketchup. But normal people eat the food and dip it in the ketchup. Mavarech ala ikka upoite et atzvela. You always make a bracha on the main thing and you exempt the other thing. Now, bei mi bracha shelifnea. It goes for the bracha before. Bei mi bracha shelachre, or the bracha afterwards. Loi mi boi im ha'ikka mu ravin atayfel. It doesn't matter whether they're actually mixed together. Ela afilu kol echa davar. Even if they are separate. Like ketchup on the plate. Okay? So if they're mixed together like jam on a piece of a cracker, then okay, right? Certainly that's just a mazonot. The jam is subsidiary. But even if they're separate, if I like dipping my latke in apple sauce or something like that, the bracha is on the latke, not on the apple sauce. Because the latke is the ikka and the sauce is the tata. What happens if they are both the ikka? What if I like them both? I look at my plate and I say, I love sausages, but I love tomato ketchup as well. I love them both. So what bracha do you make? Says the Mishnah Brura. Afilu shneim ikarim, if they're both the ikar, you still make one bracha. Elasha'achad merubah mechaveru, you look at which is more, is the majority. Haroiv hu ha'ikar. Then you make a bracha on the majority. We do not like making two brachas. And let me just mention this now. Let's say I did make two brachas, because I wanted to do so, and I made a bracha on the subsidiary first, and then on the main thing. For example, let's say I have my sausage and my tomato ketchup. So, maybe not tomato ketchup, because that's probably shehakol as well, but let's say I have my jam on my cracker. Fine? My jam on my cracker. So the jam, let's say, is shehakol, the jelly is shehakol, and the cracker is mezonot. So what if I just scraped up some jam and say, I'm going to make a bracha on this first, shehakol niyidu barak, ate the jam, and then take the cracker, now I'll make a mezonot on the cracker. So that is not called a bracha levatola, because I didn't make any brachas that were incorrect, but it's called a bracha she'ein tzricha. It's a bracha that I didn't need to make, because I could have just made a mezonot on the cracker and it would have covered the jam. Am I allowed to make a bracha she'ein tzricha? This is actually a very interesting halachic shaila. Again, not a bracha levatola. Bracha levatola is where I made a bracha that wasn't required at all. But when I engineered a situation that I made extra brachas, so that's the debate. Most poskim paskin that you should avoid, where possible, making a bracha she'ein tzricha. But there are poskim that say that if there's a reason, if there's a halachic need to do so, maybe because there's a sofek, a question as to what is the correct bracha, and I need to do this one first. Or, for example, on Shabbat. I don't know if you've ever seen on Shabbat, that many Sfaradim have a minhag. Before they make hamotzi on Shabbat, they eat a few brachot of different things. I don't know if anyone's seen that. They have an olive, they make brikra eitz. They have a little something which is a brei pri adam, a bit of strawberry. They have a little shahakol. And then they go and wash and make hamotzi. Now, Ashkenazim don't do that. Why not? Because Ashkenazim say, well, there's no reason to do that, because if I ate these as part of my meal, so they would all be covered by the hamotzi. But the Sfaradim say, no, it's appropriate to make extra brachot, because on Shabbat we're lacking brachot. Remember, there's an inyan, there's an idea that one should say 100 brachot every day. And on Shabbat, that's difficult, because you're losing all the brachot in Shemona Esrei, that normally you've got 19, 19, 19, and on Shabbat you only got 7. Say, okay, you have Musaf, but still you're short of brachot. So the Sfaradim say, following the Psag, that it's okay to make brachot she'enu tzrichot if there is a good reason to do it. Okay, but normally speaking, we would not do that. So you would not make two brachas, and the Mishnah Brura is very clear, even if you like both things, you have to work out which is the majority. Okay, now, armed with those rules, I don't have one in front of me now. I'm afraid I ate all my chocolate raisins before it came to the shear, so I would have kept a prop, but I didn't have enough self-control, sorry. So let's say you've got a chocolate raisin here. What bracha should you make on a chocolate raisin? So the answer should be very clear. If you want the raisin, you make a ha'etz. If you want the chocolate, you make a shehakol, whichever is the ikar. And if you really want them both, you work out which is the majority, and you make a bracha on that. But either way, it should be, it seems, that you should only make one bracha on a chocolate raisin. Either ha'et or shehakol, depending on what you like, or whatever is the majority, which, by the way, is chocolate. We'll see in a minute. However, Rav Moshe disagreed. Rav Moshe has a tshuva dedicated specifically to chocolate-coated raisins. This is in 1972, so it's obviously not a recent thing, it's an old thing. So look at what he says. It's a very short tshuva. Let's look at it together. He says, "B'dava hatzimukim hamachupim b'shokolad," raisins which are covered in chocolate. "Ma nechshav ha'ikar," what is called the ikar? "Hine ke'ein zehu," he brings a comparison. "The merkachat," some kind of spread which is spread, "shenoitin al rikikim," which is put on a cracker, dakim, on thin crackers. "V'hu arikikim tzveilim," and then the crackers there are only a subsidiary. I'm only doing it to hold the herring. That's an interesting question. If I have a cracker and I have a piece of herring, what am I really after, the cracker or the herring? Now, it depends on your perspective on life. He says, "Achsham," looking in Prima Gal, in the Magen Avram, "She'oisen arikikin shelo yitamfu hayadayin," you're really only using the cracker to really you want the herring. But like, people are not usually, maybe some people would, but most people don't just stick their hands in the herring and pull out a piece of herring. Most people are delicate enough to put a bit of herring on the cracker and eat it. So, "Shelo yitamfu hayadayin," you don't want to get your hands dirty. But this is not the case with raisins. No one's worried about that. You hold on to the chocolate. And then, what about the case where you have very flavorsome crackers? Dufshanim, which are like honey crackers. Then we say there's a whole section of Shulchan Aruch which says that your kavana, your intent, is to eat the cracker as well as the paste. Okay, and then you'd always make a bracha on both. Ula Mishnah Brura, and he brings you a Mishnah Brura. Al Dufshanim Shehena Ika Ein Sham. Well, Dufshanim Dufshanim Shegamat Simukim. So I want to compare, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, the case of a chocolate coated raisin to the case of a tasty cracker with a tasty condiment on top. Shegamat Simukim Hu Davar Tov. The raisin is also something very good, Bifnei Atzma, on its own. Avol Hu Vadai wrote Shegam HaChocolate. But you're also wanting the chocolate. You're in a real bind. You're in a real dilemma. I love raisins and I love chocolate. What am I going to do? Mitzad Atzma. Therefore, he says, Tzarech levarech al shnehem. You have to make a brocha on both. How are you going to make a brocha, two brochas, on a chocolate raisin? The kevan shemachupin, who, since they are covered in cut chocolate, ein yochol levarech tchila ala tzimukim, you can't get to the raisin before you go through the chocolate. But tzarech lechavin shemavarech shehakol, so first make a brocha on shehakol on the chocolate, shaloy letzeit v'ala tzimukim, not to cover the raisin. So I make a shehakol, take a little bite of chocolate, and not cover the raisin, and then you can make a break with her eight on the raisin. Brach Hashem. The in yesh lot smukim she'en mechubim, if you have some raisins at the side, or sha'ar min eight, or you have some kind of other fruit, better to make a brocha on the other fruit, and then to make a shehakol on the chocolate. But one way or the other, Rav Moshe Feinstein is unhappy for you to make one brocha on a chocolate raisin. He wants you to make two. By the way, the Hashkofa point here is very important. Why do Jews have such a slightly OCD approach to eating food? Like a normal person, give them a bowl of cornflakes, they just eat the cornflakes and they're happy. But a Jewish person, when they look at a bowl of cornflakes, they think to themselves, oy vey, what is the ikker and what is the toefl? Do I make an adama? Do I make a shahakol? And by the time he's finished working out the brocha, everybody else has finished their breakfast and left. Why are we so fixed? And the answer is, hashgraphically, this is critical. If you think about this, this area of brochas is asking us many times throughout the day to sit and think in life, what is the main thing and what is the subsidiary thing? What are the big ideas? What are the small ideas? Don't sweat the small stuff. Focus on the big stuff. And Hilchos Brochas is like a training camp in being able to allow ourselves to identify in life what is the ikkah and what is the teufel? And this is one of the things which is one of the hardest things in life. Because we often get wrapped up in the teufel, in the small stuff, and ignore the big picture. And hopefully the training of the discipline of Hilchos Brochas will enable us to actually bring this into life and focus on the big things in life and not focus on the small things in life, which ultimately are much, much less important. Fine. So what brocha do most people make on chocolate raisins? So I already had an email from someone last week that said, I make two brochas on a chocolate raisin, like Rav Moshe Feinstein. Well, I actually make one brocha on a chocolate raisin, but you will find that there are people who do one or do the other. Most poskim disagree with Rav Moshe and say that actually you go with the ikka or the toefl or the majority, the ikka, whichever it is, or the majority, and shehakol is probably the right thing. But at the end of the day, ha'etz will also work, because b'dieved, to make a ha'etz even on the chocolate, is probably okay as well. Finally, the last point, the last two points. Okay, so I've managed to work out what to say about on my chocolate raisin. I've eaten my chocolate raisin. Now I have a new brocha's question, which is, do I need to make a brocha achrona? And if so, what brocha achrona do I make? What brocha do I make after eating my chocolate raisins? So what's the normal rule? The normal rule is that you make a brocha achrona only if you eat a kenzayit of food within a kedei achilat pras. A kezayit is around 30 cc's, about one fluid ounce displacement of food. It's about the volume of a regular matchbox size, about the volume of a small matchbox. And I have to eat it within what the Gemara calls a kedei achilat pras, the time that one would normally eat a much bigger amount of food pras, which is around 3 to 4 minutes. And therefore, if I ate a matchbox volume within 3 to 4 minutes, I need to make a brocha achrona. Obviously, if I only nibbled, then I don't need to make a bracha achrona because I just need to break a bracha rishona. By the way, on Seder night, when we eat a kezayit of matzah within a kedei achilas pras, it goes without saying, although it needs to be said, that if you're going to start making the kezayit bigger, then proportionally you have to make the time in which you eat it bigger as well. So taking vast amounts of matzah and trying to shove them, you know, into one's mouth in the minimal amount of time is not the normal way that anybody eats, and it's not derech achila at all, and therefore that's not something. It should still be a relaxed and a normal way of eating. So does one normally eat a kezayis of chocolate raisins within a kedei achilas pras? So luckily, Rabbi Pinchas Bodner produced a wonderfully technicolored book called The Halachas of Kezayis. And in that book, I recommend it because it's just a fascinating read. He has brought pictures of every possible food you could imagine and told you how many of these things make up a kezayis. And then if there's a food that you didn't see in the book, he's brought you like shapes, squares and cylinders and cubes and all sorts of things in the book and say, if it looks this shape, it's one of these. He's put an incredible amount of effort into working out what is a kezayis. And fortunately for me, he's got chocolate-covered peanuts and chocolate-covered raisins. How many chocolate-covered peanuts are there in a kezayis? 19, he says, of that size. This is a life size. How many chocolate-covered raisins are there in a kezayis? 30. Okay? So if I ate 30 chocolate-covered raisins within 3 to 4 minutes, which is actually quite a doable deal from my perspective, then you would have to eat, make a bracha achrona. Which bracha achrona would you make, though? So if you said shehakol, then you're the seberei nefashos, like everything else. If you made ha'eitz, then that's a bit more tricky. Because if you make a brepri ha'eitz, and one of the foods that you eat is one of the famous fruits, the five fruits, pomegranates, grapes, dates, figs, etc., grapes, but the kezayis was a combination of that and other things. For example, let's say I ate two or three grapes, and then I ate a bunch of oranges with it as well, and between them I made up a kezayis, then you'd make bereina fashis. You wouldn't make a la peiros on the grapes, because the combination is from different kinds of fruit. However, if I ate a full kezayis of raisins within that time, then I'd have to make an al ha-peiros, al ha-eitz, al pri ha-eitz, etc., etc. So basically it works, I think, like this, that if you ate up to 30 chocolate raisins within 3 to 4 minutes, you'll make a brain of foshas. But if you're a marathon jumbo chocolate raisin eater and you manage to eat 92 chocolate raisins within a kedei achilas pras, I suspect that you'll feel rather ill, actually, at that point. But then you would make an al haperis, because then you've eaten a full kezayis of raisins. Two more points. There is another shaila, by the way, which is brought up in Shulchan Aruch, which is number 20. Not everybody's aware of this. It's about brocha achrona. He says as follows. Look with me. Ha'oichel pochen mikazayis bein mipat bein mishar oichle. If you eat less than a kezayis, you eat a little bit of food, whatever it is, mevarech tchila, you make a brocha at the beginning, brocha ha'ru'uyi le'oisel hanin, whatever is suitable for that thing, or la'acharav ein mevarech klal. It's well known if you have a little nibble of bread, you have to wash, you have to make hamotzi, but you don't bench. If you have a little nibble of carrot, you don't make a brocha afterwards, you have to have a kezayis within 3 to 4 minutes. The yesh mistabkin loma, but there is a shaila, he says, sha'al dava shehu kebriyaso, on something which is a whole fruit, and you eat it whole, to go in gargir shal anav, like one grape, or shal rimon, or one rimon seed, shemavarchin achrav, afapi shaloi she'ein bo kezayis. Maybe you have to make an after brocha on one grape. It's not a kezayis, but because it has chashivut, it's important, it has its own independent value, because it's one whole thing. A little bit like parallel ideas when an insect falls in your food, it's not bottled, it's not nullified even in 60 or 100 or 1,000, because it has its own independence. It's one whole thing, it's not batel. So therefore he says, I'm not sure, maybe you'd have to make a brocha achroni even after one grape. Ulakach, nachoni, zaher, and therefore he thinks it's appropriate to be careful. Shalol echol biri apochon mikazai. Don't eat one grape, he says. There are people who are machmir. Or if you are going to take a little bit off, so that it's not completely whole, because if you eat one grape, you've introduced a shaila, do I make a brocha achrona on this one grape? So maybe the same is true of one chocolate raisin. Because I ate one whole raisin. So actually that's not the case, because Rav Shlomo Zalman says this halacha does not apply to raisins because they've been smushed and they've been dried out, and therefore they're no longer considered independently a birya, and therefore that wouldn't be a problem. So that's fine. I'm back to my shaila to whether I ate 30 or 92 chocolate raisins, which I would never do, but that's fine. Last point is chocolate coated orange peels. What bracha do you make on a regular orange peel? So the Mishnah Berurah says, we're not sure. If you eat a regular piece of orange peel, he brings three shitot. Either it's ha'eitz, because you ate some of the fruit of the tree, or it's ha'adama, because you ate the fruit in a normal, an unusual way, or it's shahakol, because you ate something that normal people don't eat. It's edible, but it's not something which is normally eaten, a bit of orange rind. So you can make any of those three brachas on a regular piece of orange rind, but everybody agrees that once you coat it with chocolate, then it's a shahakol, because really the chocolate is coming as the ikka, and the orange peel in the middle may be shahakol as well. So who knew there was so much to say about chocolate? I brought you a few other shilas as well that I didn't talk about. Drinking hot chocolate before tefillah is an interesting question. Whether chocolate gets its own brocha in a meal if you're in a motzi meal. Coloring food with chocolate on Shabbos. Breaking chocolate letters on Shabbos is fascinating. If you're eating a cake with chocolate letters, are you able to break up the letters? And the last one, which is my favorite, are you allowed to eat chocolate money with God's name on it? Because the Americans make chocolate coins like the regular coins, and it says, in God we trust. And if you have a chocolate coin saying, in God we trust, are you allowed to chew it? Or is that called destroying God's name? I will leave you to ponder on that one while you eat your chocolate money over the week. But that was what we had to say about chocolate. Bottom line, I think for most people, chocolate is shahakol, chocolate raisins are shahakol, chocolate orange peels are shahakol. And if you manage to eat 92 chocolate raisins within 3 to 4 minutes, then shkoyach. And that might be a little bit over the top, but then you'll know what bracha to make. Okay, any other points here? Raisins and cereal. Oh gosh, loads of shilas. I haven't got time for all of that. So someone said they're going to eat less than 30 raisins at a time. Okay, good. Excellent. Cholent with barley is a mazonis. It could well be a mazonis. Absolutely. Because that's the ikka. But there's so much. Hilchos brachas is so complex. It's one of the most complex areas. But that's why the Gemara said, and we'll finish with this, if you go and learn brachas, you can become a chassid. Because you really begin to take halacha seriously, you look at everything in a new way. That's why Jews look around the world and they don't, like halachic man, Rav Soloveitchik says, we don't just see chocolate raisins when we look at chocolate raisins, we see five or six different sugyas in Shulchan Aruch before our eyes when we pick up our chocolate raisin. That is halachic man. And if you want to be that way, then that's definitely a school. So that's enough for now. Next week, just by way of prior advance notice, in honor of the Aseret HaDibros, which we're reading in Parshas Yisro, I want to spend a couple of shiurim looking at issues that we've never looked at before from the Aseret HaDibros. A few mitzvahs that we've never looked at, which are very halachically and hashkafically relevant from Aseret HaDibros, and then it's nearly Purim. We'll look at a Purim issue. We'll go back to the Aseret HaDibros maybe, and then we'll into Pesach. And Pesach is in about 9 weeks from now. And if that makes you happy, then that's good. I wish you a very good week. A healthy
Thank
week,
you.
And I should, please God, we should meet again very soon. All the best. We'll
Thank
speak to you
very
soon.
Much.
Charles, bye bye.
Thank you very much. Thank you.